Today's program has been brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Today, we'll be talking hard cider and Mason shakers. But up first, happy Hanukkah to all of my folks out there celebrating the Festival of Lights. I just want to wish you guys a happy Kwanzaa. I just realized today that we have one more episode of Hot Grease on Heritage Radio before 2013 kicks off. So next week will be our final show. We're going to go on a little Christmas break here on Hot Grease. And so next week we're going to have Brown Betty Bakery. I'm going to do a little ode to Kwanzaa on Hot Grease. So we have a super packed show. We're going to take a break and come back and talk hard cider. All right, folks, keep listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Ghost Walk by the Budos Band on the heritageradionetwork.org.
United States that has its own USDA inspected red meat abattoir or slaughterhouse and its own USDA inspected poultry abattoir or slaughterhouse. We partner with Whole Foods to deliver our high quality meat and poultry from Miami, Florida, all the way to Princeton, New Jersey. One family, one farm, five generations, 145 years. Full circle return to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. For more information, please visit our website, whiteoakpastures.com.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. I have a confession for everyone today. I don't drink beer, but I'm absolutely in love with hard cider and have been for like the past 8 years. And on the phone today to talk all things cider is Izra Sherman, the person, one of the folks behind Eve Cidery. Izra, welcome to Hot Grease.
Hey, thanks for having us. I'm a little intimidated, but I'll try to meet your expectations.
No need to be intimidated here on Hot Grease. So first off, hard cider 101. A lot of people, when they hear the word cider, they don't think hard cider. They think of the apple-y, apple juice type
stuff.
Yeah,
that's a question we get a lot. We sell at the Union Square Green Market, so we're on the street talking to people a lot, and we call our alcoholic beverage cider, and a lot of people have that question or that confusion. They think, like you just said, that cider is like kind of raw apple juice that's been unpasteurized, perhaps, and like in a big jug. And what we say is that, we sold fresh cider for a while, and we included that word cider in our description of it. But we use the word cider like they use in Europe to just describe a fermented beverage or a fermented wine that's made with apples. So it's an apple wine.
And I must say, not only can you find hard cider made with apples, I know the very first hard cider that I ever tasted, you can do hard cider with pears as well. I'm right,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, totally. And that's like the best cider I've ever had is Perry cider. They call it Perry, I think, in England. But, yeah, pear cider is great. Really is. You can't, as sort of scarce as apple cider has been, pear cider is even harder to come by.
Oh.
Find it.
So yeah. I'm in love with you guys. Is it called Rustica Cider?
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. I actually went to Astor Center, picked up a few bottles right after Cider Week, and I'm like, this is good stuff. The finish is perfect. It's perfect. What do you suggest if people, you know, it's the holidays, Hanukkah, it's right here at, we're in the middle of Hanukkah right now, and then Christmas is coming, and then New Year's. And all these folks are having cakes and, you know, prime rib and fried potatoes.
Right.
What do you suggest in terms of pairing cider? Is there a no-no in terms of with pairing hard cider?
Well, there's like as much difference among the ciders as there are like among the different grape varieties of grape wine. Really, a lot of people are, you know, familiar with cider through kind of the six-pack sort of hoppy ciders that are bubbly and kind of sweet and are sort of a concoction of like apple concentrate and forced carbonation and sweetener and tannin and acid, concoction that's put together. But between the cider makers and then even among the ciders that each cidery produces, there is a big difference between them. The Rustica that you said that you got at Astor that you liked, that's the sweetest cider that we make.
Oh, really? And it's really not all that sweet. Oh.
Yeah, right. So when I say to people, like, it's the sweetest we have,
oh, wow.
People say, oh, well, it's not really sweet. But, like, as compared to our drier ciders, like, if you tasted them in sequence, the others would taste really dry. And the other ciders are more tannic and more acidic. The Rustica is pretty, it's like our other ciders. It's bottle conditioned. That is like a traditional grape champagne. It's fermented in the bottle a second time. As a result of, you know, an addition of yeast and sugar to the bottle. So that second fermentation takes place in the bottle and the gas can't escape because there's a beer cap on it. And then when we disgorge the yeast, we top it off with juice that we've sweetened after we've pressed by freezing. But so it is a sweet, like really fruity cider. And that one goes really well with like stinky cheeses, blue cheese. It goes well with cured meats, spicy food, like especially like curries, I would say.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So Eve Cidery, how many ciders do you guys currently make? And you're located where? Are you near Ithaca, New York?
Yeah, we're near, I always say we're near Ithaca because that's like the identifiable town. Mm-hmm. But here I'm like sitting out on my porch here. It's really wild to be broadcast across Brooklyn. I'm sitting looking at my wood pile and our dairy barn, which is, we converted to a cidery out in Zanatton, and it's pretty rural, steep hills, wooded hills, and so we're 20 miles south of Ithaca in the Finger Lakes region, and it takes us, it's about 230 miles northwest of New York up here.
I totally need to get there. One of the last questions that I have for you, what I'm seeing now, definitely that I'm predicting that 2013 is without a doubt going to be the year of hard cider. I think there's going to be a huge explosion. One of the things that I find that's very difficult, and maybe you have a resource, where can a consumer go to like find all of these micro or very small producers of hard ciders around the country? There's not really even a book that's out now that talks about this new revelation of hard ciders that's happening in the United States.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, the cider in general is definitely seeing a huge upswing in consumption. And so like the big companies are interested in it. But also, you know, the people who see themselves as artisans are very interested in producing, like, a unique beverage now and And the increase in like the artisan ciders, like you say, is very is taking place. How do you find them? Well, did you say there was a book that you were aware of?
No, I said there isn't one. Or really not like a place, like an association of micro hard ciders. I don't even, is there one that you can find online? No.
No, but here's some things that people could check out. The New York Cork Report, this sommelier or beverage director for a restaurant in Ithaca, his name's David Flaherty.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, for a restaurant in New York City called Hearth, and a couple others. He writes a cider column now for the New York Cork Report online, and he talks about good ciders. There's the New York City Cider Week, which came and went for the second time this summer, but that'll come around again probably next year. And there's a lot of references on, and cider producers from the Northeast anyway, that are out and about New York City.
And if folks wanted to find out more about y'all's products, tell us where, give us your website. And I think you guys are not on Twitter, but definitely on Facebook, right?
Yeah, we are on Facebook, and we have a website. They could just Google Eve Cidery.
All right. Isra?
Yeah, and there's a book Ben Watson wrote called Cider, Hard and Sweet.
Okay.
Very informative. And Andrew Lee, Autumn, my wife, was prepping me for the show, and she said he has a very good website. I guess people would have to Google Andrew Lee, L-E-A.
All right.
And then finally, there's New England Cider Days. You could Google that, which is a big to-do up in Massachusetts every year in the fall, which people who are really interested in cider go to. It's gotten very big.
Perfect.
And there's a lot of producers there.
Perfect. All right, Mr. Sherman, thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having us.
For coming on, Eve Cidery.
Okay.
Happy holidays to you.
Oh, wait, have a nice
And
day.
I hope to get up
holidays.
To Ithaca and see you soon.
Yeah, look us up if you ever come. You could drop by us.
Cool. Have a good one.
Okay.
Listeners, right. We'll be back with more cocktails or whatever you want to make in a mason shaker. Keep listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to Nature's Wrath by the Budos Band on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Remember, you can check all of our program listings and Hot Grease show archives on heritageradionetwork.org. All right, folks, it is time to shake things up. And in the studio today, to talk all things Mason Shaker, is Eric Prum. Eric, welcome to Hot Grease.
Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm great. I'm honored to have you in the studio. I'm going to, without a doubt, call you and your business partner, Josh Williams, the poster child of how to make it happen on Kickstarter.com. Did you guys have the most successful Kickstarter project?
Believe it or not, there have been many more successful projects, but ours, we were really fortunate with ours. It sort of blew us away, the amount of supporters and backers that we had, and we were able to go way beyond our goal, which was a fabulous way to start a company.
And you have to tell folks, you guys came on a Kickstarter with Mason Shaker, which, very briefly, tell folks what that is. And your initial Kickstarter goal was like, what, $5,000?
Yeah, so we came up with the concept for the Mason Jar Cocktail Shaker, which sort of started with just a few simple sketches that we put together. And we went into sort of a sampling phase where we got a prototype for the shaker, and we really needed that extra bump of $5,000 for the tooling, which is like the hardest part of the process. So we put together a quick video, threw it up on Kickstarter, and kind of promoted it through, whatever means we could, all kinds of social media, just, general general PR push with the campaign. And I think we ended up somewhere in the 70s, 70,000 or something like that, with maybe 2,000 individual backers. So,
and the mason jar, you know, as we were sitting talking, we talked on the phone a few months ago and talking today, we're both, you know, we have that Southern whatever you want to call it running through our brain. Veins.
Absolutely.
You're from Charlottesville.
Yeah. Josh and I are both from Virginia. Yeah, and the mason jar is just something you kind of see everywhere down there. Now up here as well. But we had the idea to make a cocktail shaker out of one back in college, honestly, when we were mixing up drinks for people. And we used to do it in the 32-ounce mason jars.
Cause really?
It's got the, you know, the measurements on the side. They were always around. So to create this actual cocktail shaker out of one that could be, you know, like a great thing to have in a bar or a kitchen was something that was a long time coming.
And what about I feel like over the last few years there is a revival of Made in America products. Were you influenced at all when you started the Kickstarter, or, you know, just drawing the sketches? Did you think that, wow, I'm about to make this great product that is rooted in America, more so the entrepreneurial spirit?
Yeah, I mean, with every step that we've taken, it's funny, I was at a Kickstarter forum talking about this a couple of days ago, and everyone with these projects seems to have a very similar goal. And for us, every step that we could possibly do locally and domestically and everything, we really strove to do that. Everything from printing the boxes, you know, with this guy that does plate printing below my apartment, to, you know, assembling everything here. It's been a struggle because some things you can't find domestically. But, with the ball mason jar, they're made in Texas. And, you know, our boxes are made in Pennsylvania. We're still trying to find a long-term domestic source to stamp out the metal tops.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's been really rewarding to really focus on local and American manufacturers, because you can really establish some great relationships with some great hardworking people.
So let's break down the mason shaker. I'm looking at it. I've seen it in person because you guys are actually in West Elm stores.
Yeah.
All over the country, right?
Yeah, all I think 80 some stores. So
people who are listening, and we have folks from all over the United States that listen to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. If they go to West Elm, what will they find?
Well,
from you guys,
they've got our mason jar cocktail shaker in a lovely box that was, like I said, printed downstairs. We've got a whiskey bottle style decanter that we did for West Elm. Some whiskey stones as well, and those are actually from a great quarry in Finland. We did these cocktail straws in a simple jigger, so you can pretty much sort of fill out your whole bar with these sort of southern pieces.
And so this jar that I'm looking at now, what size is this? It's just the 32-ounce?
It's the 32-ounce regular mouth mason jar. The parts that we create were the actual cap and straining lid that create a true cocktail shaker out of the mason jar.
So twist off the lid for me?
Yeah.
So he's twisting off the lid.
So it's basically four pieces.
Ah.
You've got the collar that would be on a standard mason jar.
I see.
You've got the glass jar. And then we've got this beveled lid that we created that has the straining part. And that seals down. And you can put the cap on, shake it up, and you're good to
go. So there's a cap on top of the... Oh, I see. So you mean to tell me... No, I am... You know, I have to give y'all a hand clap. No one came up with this before you guys?
No, they didn't.
Get out of here.
We've been thinking about it for a couple of years. The key is to get it to seal between the actual jar and the lid, because you have to use this collar that's standard with the mason jar. So it took us a pretty long time to think about how to actually do that in the actual process of sampling these things, because it looked great as a picture, but to create it took a little bit of thought.
And I remember seeing on your Kickstarter that people were like, if you went to the comments, folks were making suggestions like, oh, do it in this or do this color. Did you guys use or take some of the comments that folks were saying on the Kickstarter about what they wanted in a shaker and implement it into the final design.
Yeah, feedback's been great. I mean, Kickstarter's a very organic sort of thing where, you know, you've got to take some of the feedback with a filter. But there have been some really helpful suggestions in perfecting the shaker and making the newest version better and better. Because you're truly launching a designed good,
mm-hmm.
and then you get it out to these people and you get great feedback because they're clearly passionate about the project as well. So I would encourage people that are curious about Kickstarter or that are interested in launching a project on Kickstarter to really take that into consideration.
Yeah. What I love about y'all is that people actually, they gave money. You're going to get a shaker or...
Yeah, absolutely.
You got a physical thing. It wasn't like, oh, someone's going to do this project and will we find out about it?
Yeah. It's been a little bit crazy because we had to ship out 2,000 individual boxes.
So
when you think about the logistics of that when you're not a shipping company, it's been a little bit crazy because we've been getting, you know, the ones that go out to crazy countries sometimes come back, and it's been kind of a rewarding experience. You definitely have to be diligent and stay on it because, you know, success is a great thing on Kickstarter, but it also tends to all these other crazy things, you know?
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and talk cocktails galore and find out some of Eric's favorite places in New York City to get Southern cocktails. All right, folks, keep listening to Hot Grease. We're going to take a quick break.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
You're listening to River Serpentine by the Budos Band on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Today's show is being sponsored by White Oak Pastures. And the show today is being produced by myself and engineered by my favorite boy, Joe G. Let me give a Southern Girls hug to Roberta's Restaurant located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York, the location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. All right, folks, we are talking cocktails, and in the studio, if you're just tuning in, we have Eric Prum, one half of Mason Shakers. So I have to ask you, where do you go in New York City to get, you know, the favorite classic Southern cocktail?
Sure. There's a couple of places I really like to go. One of my favorites are recently opened up just under a year ago, but it's called Wayland's.
Okay.
It's down on, I think, 12th and A in the East Village, or 12th and C in the East Village. And they make some great cocktails. They also keep a really good list of bourbons and a good beer list as well. It's a great place for anybody.
Do they have cider? That's the question.
Ooh, that's cider show. Let's see. I don't know, actually, but that is a very good question. I bet they do.
Yeah, I find that a really, really good bar would have at least one good cider.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. I also go the Brooklyn Star. We were talking about them earlier. Those are a great bunch of guys that always keep a great bunch of bourbons, which are, you know, critical for a lot of winter cocktails. That's a good place to go. We also, I mean, I probably go out way too much, actually.
I think everyone in New York City goes out way too much.
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
Maybe not. I mean, I guess when you start getting into the cocktail side of business, too, you end up at all these different bars.
What about in Charlottesville? I visited Charlottesville probably about 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And it so reminds me of my hometown, Athens, Georgia.
Right.
What are some of your favorite bars in Charlottesville?
Charlottesville, it's actually curious because it's a college town, so a lot of the bars turn over so quickly.
Yeah.
It's unreal. You know, I'll go back. I've been out of college like 5 years, and I go back, and you almost don't recognize the landscape. But there actually is a great spot. It's a brewery, but with a good bar and cocktail list called South Street Brewery, downtown Charlottesville. And that place is just, the ambiance down there is awesome. It's a great place to, you know, to grab a drink on a cold night. It's a great place to meet people. They've got fireplaces and like lounges, and it's just like a really warm, it's in a warehouse, you know, it's a really cool feel.
And I know your business partner, Josh, is really enthusiastic and the one that's really behind like all the great recipes that you guys gave to folks that are you know, that were part of the Kickstarter project.
Yeah.
What are some of y'all's favorite? What would you say is the classic Mason Shaker cocktail that you guys came up with?
Well, we just did a really good one. We partnered with a liquor company called Art in the Age. So we've been working with them on a lot of projects and events, and we just did a maple bourbon drink down there.
They're in Philly, right?
They're in Philly, but we partnered on an event down in DC.
Okay.
And it was we used their root.
Mm-hmm.
And mix that with a bourbon, sort of a sours mix, and maple, and ended it with a little bit of rosemary. It was awesome.
Oh my God.
Drink. And you know, we're planning on actually, when we launch our website, or we have launched our website, but as we sort of launch the you know, the functional day to day side of it, we're going to be posting up all kinds of different cocktails. And we had a recipe contest on the Kickstarter. And
yeah.
We got a lot of really cool, interesting recipes from that. So look forward to us sort of maybe launching that on a weekly basis, like a featured cocktail based on the time of year.
So speaking of what's next, what I didn't ask you is, are there any bars in New York City or beyond that are actually carrying your shaker at the bar? Like,
there's a lot that have shown interest. What we focused on with this cocktail shaker, it's the British style cocktail shaker. Most bars that do say high volumes,
yeah,
use what would be like a strainer Boston style cocktail shaker. So the people that have been interested in this is more of a home bar product.
Okay.
It also is a theme bar product. Like, so there are a lot of bars that have reached out to us that have a certain aesthetic,
yeah,
and that maybe focus on a lower volume of really good cocktails throughout a night, as opposed to the bars that are really trying to turn out a really high volume of drinks. Cause that would be the Boston style, where you're basically using just a glass and a strainer.
So what's next for you guys? You're in West Elm. You're partnering with brands,
yep,
and even cocktail bars are saying, hey, I love this beautifully designed. So what can folks expect next from you guys?
Well, Josh and I's actual company is called WMP Design. And what we've tried to do with the cocktail shaker and our line of barware at West Elm is to create a real brand of, you know, Southern inspired cocktail ware that is sort of, you know, uses this sort of theme we've been saying with New York industrialism. You know, it's an actual functional cocktail shaker on top of a mason jar. So I think the next step for us would be to create a really thoughtful, high quality barware in that same aesthetic, and then move outside of that into maybe more of a lifestyle brand. I don't know if that's too ambitious, but it's what we
No, I think it's doing. Great.
Thanks. Yeah, that's sort of the goal, I guess.
And when will I be able to attend this big? Y'all need to have a big. Did y'all have a big launch party for this?
Oh, we're working on it. You'll be invited. Don't worry.
Okay, because I'm like, yo, I need a huge cocktail party.
Yeah, we'll be throwing one, I think, in January or February, and you'll definitely be invited on out. That'll be a lot of fun.
Cool. Yeah, I need to find all my folks who are listening who are liquor sponsors or folks. I need to partner up and have something, because these jars are absolutely, they say everything about what's happening now in the South, what's happening in Brooklyn, what's happening around the country. So congrats to you guys.
Thank you, Nicole.
And thanks so much for coming on Hot Grease. I'm really honored to have you on here before you blow up. And then I'm like, oh yeah, they were in this magazine, they were here and there, but they were on Hot Grease first.
Thanks, Nicole. Really appreciate
yeah,
it.
Yeah, thanks so much. And if folks want to find you guys, you are all...
really simple. www.masonshaker.com.
There you have it. Listeners, thanks so much for listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Remember, you can listen live every Monday at 3:30 Eastern Time on heritageradionetwork.org. But until then, always take the road less traveled.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.